week on Fam for Racing Radio for our Bristol NASCAR weekend preview and Hot Topic Sound Off. Joining us for today's podcast is our co-host, Jay Huseman. Welcome to the show, Jay.
Good afternoon, Sharon. A big weekend at Bristol. A lot of things to be decided. Some of it championships, some of it to determine championships. So a lot going on. And that's not even talking about Hot Topics yet.
I know. There is so much news coming out this week. Okay, we are going to, in our first half hour, we're going to talk some short track news and some upcoming races. We'll also preview the ARCA Menards, Sioux Chief Showdown, and ARCA East race at Bristol Motor Speedway. One race, three different series accumulating points. So this is a really big race. It actually is the ARCA East season finale. And then we'll also give a quick update on the ARCA West as well. At the top of the hour, in our second half hour, we're going to have the media interview with Eric Almirola that took place yesterday. He's the NASCAR Cup Series driver of the number 10 Ford at Stuart Haas Racing. He has a new sponsor, and it's a kind of a very interesting situation with his sponsors. So we'll have that interview. And then we'll preview the NASCAR Truck Series at Bristol. They had their elimination race last week at Kansas. I think that was the elimination race, wasn't it, Jay?
Yes, it was. For them,
yeah.
For them, Bristol is the first race of the new round.
Exactly, the round of eight they're at now. So we're going to close out the segment in our third half hour with the NASCAR Xfinity Series season finale, as well as the Cup Series at Bristol. Both of those races are at Bristol Motor Speedway. At the top of the fourth hour, then stay tuned for our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off discussion with the Fan for Racing crew. So that would be myself, Jay, as well as Mike Orzel will be joining us for that conversation. So let's go ahead and get started with Racing America and some of the short track news. There's not a whole lot more than what we talked about on Monday night. But there is a few things that we can talk about here.
Well, to start with, you're right, from Wednesday or here into Wednesday now, not a whole lot more comes back up. But I know we got Thompson Speedway. They're set to roar back to life here on a Wednesday.
Exactly. And then also, I know we'll be talking more extensively about this during our Hot Topic Sound Off segment, but in case you missed the announcement from Kyle Busch and Kyle Busch Motorsports that he'll be racing at Richard Childress Racing for next season, they have a video post-announcement over at Racing America. So if you want to check that out, that's available over at Racing America as well. And part of that news is that Kyle Busch Motorsports is also moving over to Chevrolet for next season. So big, big news there in that regard.
Well, and that certainly does come into play when you talk about the short track news with KBM trucks. I know with his late model, they aren't necessarily by brand, per se, a manufacturer, but the driver development program, I think, is going to change up hugely as far as that goes throughout the line. So definitely going to be interesting to see how this all plays out down the future. This decision that was made yesterday or announced yesterday isn't just about Kyle Busch RCR. There's a lot of impacted things that we have yet to see the full impact of.
Absolutely. So watch for more news in that regard. Now, there's also some penalties issued in the CARS Tour Penalties were announced for Carson Quapel as well as Jake Garcia pertaining to their actions in the HarrisonWorkwear.com 225 at Tri-County Speedway on Friday evening. After an accident on the cool down lap of the car's late model stock car tour feature that saw him turn Zach Miracle into the wall, points leader Carson Quapel has been suspended for the next event at Ace Speedway for violating Section 1A of the penalty code stated in the series rule book. Under this guideline, any member who performs an act or participates in actions deemed by officials as detrimental to racing or the series can be assessed a fine of $500 or face a suspension or lose championship points. So along with that suspension, Quapel's also been placed on probation by the Cars Tour for three final races of the 2022 season. Any additional violations he commits while on probation could result in further disciplinary actions by the series. For Garcia, he turned William Sawalich around in the final lap while battling for the lead. He will be allowed to keep his victory in the 100-lap Cars Pro Late Model Tour feature, but he must forego his total race winnings of $4,000. After carefully reviewing every single angle of the last lap accident at Tri-County and seeking opinions of other race directors from respected series, the officials determined that Garcia was too aggressive in his attempt to overtake Sawalich, and excessive aggression caused Sawalich to lose control and impact the wall. So two very big penalties there in late models.
And unfortunately, we have seen this before. When you talk about these lower series, I know at the cup level and higher levels, we don't see a whole lot of suspensions for that. Drivers are more mature for one, more professional, but also there's a lot of sponsorship and things involved. At this late model level, that's where they're teaching them, hey, it's going to cost you if you drive like this. So I understand their position. You mentioned it. They talk to other series directors. I hate to see it, you know, for Carson Quapel, as he is, he mentioned, the points leader, had some really good runs lately. So building a reputation, and I hate to see that for him, but like I said, I think this is the level just as they're learning to drive the car, they got to learn how to handle themselves in situations.
Yes, indeed. That's part of the learning curve for these young drivers. They have to learn how to handle their emotions in these types of situations. And unfortunately, that maturity level isn't always there for the younger drivers. So sometimes they act out on things that a more mature, but a more mature driver may act differently in that regard. So we've seen it happen even in the NASCAR Top 3 series where drivers let their emotions get the best of them. And it's not an easy learning curve to handle those emotions.
No, you're right. And that's kind of categorizing as a whole. We definitely have seen some immature things from some veteran drivers. That is part of the sport. I understand that. In a case like this, it was taken a bit too far. I haven't seen a video of that race yet, but like I said, especially at this level, I think they're really trying to teach them that of this is not acceptable behavior or way to race at that level.
Absolutely. Now, Thompson Speedway is going to be set to roar on Wednesday. That's today at Thompson Speedway Motorsports Park. It's a .625-mile oval and will play host to another round of action for the Outlaw Open Modified Series at the Tri-Point Showdown 75. So look for some racing over there at Racing America from Thompson Speedway.
And if you live in an area where these races are taking place, that's great. But to be able to watch midweek racing like this is awesome. And we have the opportunity at Flow Racing as well as Racing America. I'm not sure if this one's going to be covered here on Racing America or not, but you get to see coverage of these midweek races. And I know NASCAR's looked at that, talked about it. We'll see what happens down the road. But these weekly or touring series like this, doing these midweek races, I think is extremely beneficial for the sport.
It certainly is. I'm going to head over to Flow Racing now and see what they have over there. They do have a feature here. It's actually a video. 10 questions with Short Track Super Series driver Matt Shepard is on the hot seat in this edition's of 10 questions. So kind of a fun feature there with some of the late model drivers to field some questions from, I'm not sure who's conducting the interview there, but to field some questions and for fans to get to know those drivers a little bit better. So that's always kind of fun, too.
I know we've been talking about that. Some of you more enthusiastic about it with the race for the championship on USA for the NASCAR Cup Series. This is a session to do the same thing. You get to know the drivers on a more personal level, their thoughts and insights. When we have the guests on here, a lot of the questions we ask are for that same purpose. You really get to know the drivers and understand them, and that's where you really pick your favorite, not just what car looks good out on the track or whatever, but who you can relate to.
Exactly. And we've said this before, too. There is no shortage of racing available for anybody who enjoys racing. And it doesn't matter if it's asphalt or dirt racing. There is a lot of racing streaming live at Flow Racing or Racing America that you can get involved with and watch those races. And guess what? If you happen to miss the race, we always think it's best if you can get out there to the track. But if you miss that race, you can watch the replay of the race at those locations as well. So it's really worth the extra investment to subscribe to either one of those sites to see additional racing, not only over the weekend, but throughout the week. So there is a whole lot of news available. The Whelen Tour is going to honor Eddie Partridge with a special format. So that's at Riverhead Raceway, and that's something for those that like to watch the Whelen Modified Tour, that special honoring of Eddie Partridge with the special format at Riverhead Speedway.
Eddie Partridge, by the way,
is the track owner. Go ahead.
You go on, Sharon. I haven't seen what format they're using, but on some of these races, I find an interesting aspect. I'm not saying, kind of like the All-Star race, you like to see a different format every once in a while, not necessarily weekly, but when they do these races like that where they do a different format, I know I got one coming up I got to cover, it makes it interesting to see once in a while.
Yes, it is. And I'm sorry, I said track owner. He's actually a team owner. Former Riverhead and longtime team owner Eddie Partridge is being honored with a 256-lap race named after him on Saturday, normally a 200-lap feature. The race has been extended by NASCAR Whelen Modified Tour and Riverhead officials to its new distance to pay tribute to the number six that Partridge fielded in the series for so many years. So I think that's pretty cool that they're doing that and taking the time to honor some of these folks. I know Ryan Preece is going to be there.
I was trying to think of some of the drivers that have been connected. Yeah, Ryan Preece was one of them. I think wasn't James Bickford as well?
He was associated with Sunrise Ford Racing, when it was called Sunrise Ford. It's now called Sunrise Racing. But, yeah, James Bickford raced. I don't know if he raced in the Whelen Modified, but he raced the K&M Pro Series with Sunrise Ford. And
I was thinking Partridge was there at one time, too, with the West Series.
Well, there was a Ryan Partridge that raced in the West Series.
Oh, maybe that's who I'm thinking. Okay, maybe that's who I'm thinking.
Yeah, there was a Ryan Partridge that raced in the K&N West Series.
Yep, you're right. That's where I was thinking.
Yeah. We're going to go ahead and move over to the ARCA Menards series now. They are racing this week out of Bristol Motor Speedway. As I mentioned earlier, this is going to be the season finale for, I want to see if I can find these notes. I sent them to you. I'm going to have to look at your notes. It's a season finale for the ARCA Menards Series East, the Busch Bean Sioux Chief Showdown Championship pre-race notes. And actually, it's going to be the season finale for the Sioux Chief Showdown Championship as well, Sal. Or, I'm sorry, Jay.
No worries. You mentioned it, three different point standings of championships looking to be worked on here. I know it is not the final for the ARCA Menards Series, but it is, as you mentioned, for the East Series as well as the Sioux Chief Showdown. Now, Nick Sanchez enters that Busch Beans 200 Sioux Chief Showdown Championship with a 12-point lead in the ARCA Menards Series Championship standings over Daniel Dye. And Sanchez finished second in the Kansas Lottery 150 at Kansas Speedway, while Dye finished fourth. Unfortunately, our third place, that one's a little bit tougher to cover.
It is. After two finishes outside the top 10 at DuQuoin State Fairgrounds and Kansas Speedway, Raja Karuth now sits 38 points out of the lead with three races left in the ARCA Menards Series. He was carrying the series points lead for a while, but with a couple of really rough races here, he's kind of fallen back to that 38 points back. So he's going to be looking for a rebound at Bristol.
Now, one that is sitting pretty, you mentioned Sammy Smith. He finished third at Kansas Speedway in his 12th, with his 12th top five finish in 13 starts for 2022. And he's looking to have a huge weekend here at Bristol.
He is, because he's going to look to lock up both the ARCA Menards Series East Championship and the Sioux Chief Showdown Championship by taking the green flag in the Busch Beans 200 Sioux Chief Showdown Championship. It will be his second consecutive East Championship and second consecutive Sioux Chief Showdown Championship for the number 18 team, which won last year with Ty Gibbs driving that number 18 KBM car.
And to tell you why, Smith's average finish in the nine Sioux Chief Showdown races to this point for 2022 is an impressive 2 points.
It does indeed. Also, Jesse Love and Taylor Gray return to the ARCA Menards Series for another short track round. Gray is looking for his fourth win of the season following victories at Phoenix, Mid-Ohio, Pocono, And Gray also won the East race in May at Dover Motor Speedway. It's a concrete 1 mile over, similar to Bristol. So look out there. Love won the dirt race at Illinois State Fairgrounds earlier in 2022 and won on a similar high banked half mile Salem Speedway in 2021. So those two are two drivers to definitely keep your eye on here.
And normally we see these other series a little more spaced out, but the Busch Beans 200 Sioux Chief Showdown Championship, it'll be the third race for the ARCA Menards Series in 11 days. Two of them were postponed by a day due to inclement weather, as the Rust-Oleum Automotive finishes 100 at DuQuoin, which was won by dirt specialist Ryan Unzicker, kicked off that stretch Monday, September 5th after the Lottery 150. Which was won by Corey Heim. That was also pushed back a day and ran on Sunday morning. So that's pretty impressive for this series. As you say, they normally have kind of a 2 week to maybe even a month gap between races.
That's true. There are a few drivers here that are going to have milestones this weekend. Nick Sanchez, Tony Breidinger, and Alex Club are all scheduled to make their 30th. Career ARCA Menards Series start in the Busch Beans 200 and the Sioux Chief Showdown Championship. So keep an eye on those drivers as well as they celebrate their 30th start.
Well, and we'll talk about this name here a couple times throughout the preview and Hot Topics. We got Brandon Jones. He's going to make his fifth and final start of 2022 in the number 81 Toyota for Joe Gibbs Racing. And Jones has three wins at Kansas Speedway, Charlotte Motor Speedway, and Watkins Glen International. His worst finish this season was third at Pocono.
Okay, here's another name to watch, Connor Mosack. He's returning to the number 23 Brett Holmes Racing Chevrolet. Mosack's best ARCA series finish of the season was a third at Iowa Speedway. He won the Trans Am Series race on Saturday out at Watkins Glen International. I love seeing the crossover here between the different sports racing series.
And we're starting to see that even at the cup level. Yeah, that is great. Now, we mentioned the coverage, the Busch Beans 200 Sioux Chief Showdown Championship. It's set for 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time, Thursday, September 15th. That's why we're doing the podcast today. And then we'll be televised live on FS1, but it'll also be broadcast on select affiliates of the MRN Radio Network nationwide and Sirius XM Radio Channel 391.
Okay, so that's pretty cool. Let's take a rundown of the entry list here for this race. It's usually a pretty big entry list. Let me see if I can find it here. Here it is. Okay, again, three different series for points, one race. We'll use our usual format here, going bottom up, Jay. Do you want me to start?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, A.J. Moyer in the 06 out of Tampa, Florida, will be driving the River's Edge Cottages and RV Park, number 06 Ford for Wayne Peterson, but it will be Michael Peterson on top of the pit box, and then Brian Club will be on top of the pit box for the Alex Club number 3 out of Morris, Illinois, the freshman Bubba and Muthus Royster Apparel Ford. That's a mouthful.
And in the, yeah, that one certainly was. Some of these sponsors can be. In the 02, Tyler Young Chevrolet will have young Leland Honeyman out of Mooresville, North Carolina. He's got Andrew Abbott as his crew chief for the LH Waterfront Construction. And then in another Hillenburg, this one a Toyota machine, the number 01 will be Stephanie Moyer out of Shepton, Pennsylvania, as the Harry's Pullet sponsorship with Mike Shroof as the crew chief.
Okay, and Mark Noble is fielding an entry, the number 95 for Tanner Arms out of Springfield, Tennessee, driving the Cedar City RV Toyota. David Noble will be on top of the pit box, and Terry Carroll will be on top of the pit box, team owner, for the number 91 of Justin Carroll out of West Point, Virginia, Carroll's Automotive Toyota.
And then in that number 81 Gibbs machine we talked about, Brandon Jones comes out of Atlanta, Georgia, carrying the Menards Homeworks sponsorship, Jeff Mendering as the crew chief. And then out of Tonawanda, New York, Tonawanda, New York driver, Andy Jankowicz in the number 73 cell phone machine Toyota planter box as a sponsor. Mike Dayton is the one calling the shots there.
Yeah, Andy Jankowicz. Then it'll be Michael Lira driving that number 60 from Port Orange, Florida, ACL Remodeling LLC, Guyram Tile Chevrolet for Josh Williams, and Josh will be on top of the pit box. Then it will be David Lehner on top of the pit box for the Venturini-owned number 55 Toyota for Connor Jones out of Fredericksburg, Virginia for Jones Utilities.
We talked about the crossover from different sports series. We also have that international flavor as Andres Perez de Lara out of Mexico City, Mexico, going to be driving the 51 for DGR in a Ford. Johnny Gray is listed as the owner, Derek Smith as the crew chief. And then Ashton Higgins out of Weaverville, North Carolina, brings a Leapfrog Landscaping, Alliance Driveway Solutions number 49 Toyota for his cell phone team. Tony Pankoskis, I believe, is the crew chief.
Okay, driving the familiar number 48 is Brad Smith from Shelby Township, Michigan, and he'll be behind the wheel of his own Chevrolet with Leo Krieger on top of the pit box, and Jeff McClure will be on top of the pit box for his team, fielding Ron Vandermeer Jr. in the number 44 out of Sheridan, Illinois, the Make Rack Repair Finish Line Flooring Ford.
We got a championship contender, the number 43, Daniel Dye, comes out of Dillon, Florida, with a champion container, a GMS, Murray Gallagher owned Chevrolet. Chad Bryant, as always, right there with him on top of the box. And on a roll, just got his first top 10. We talked to him, a Monday night. Christian Rose in the Bruce Cook Chevrolet, number 42. Comes from Martinsburg, West Virginia, and brings the West Virginia Tourism Almost Heaven sponsorship, along with Derek Peebles as his crew chief.
Okay. I apologize for that. Driving the number 35, another Fan for Racing guest regular, Greg Van Alst out of Andersonville, Indiana, will be driving his CB Fabricating Ford for his own team with Jim Long on the pit box, and Mart Reck will be on top of the pit box for his number 30 team, driven by Amber Balkin from Winnipeg, Manitoba. She'll be driving the Icon Ford this weekend.
Another female driver, Tony Breidner, out of Hillsborough, California, in the number 25 Venturini machine. Kevin Reed Jr. is the crew chief for that Pit Viper machine. And then we talked about Connor Mozak. He is in the Stacy Holmes-owned number 23 Chevrolet, comes out of Charlotte, North Carolina. Shane Huffman with him as the crew chief.
Okay. Shannon Rush will be on top of the pit box for Venturini Motorsports, and Jesse Love will be behind the wheel of their number 20 Crescent's Tool Toyota. He hails from Redwood City, California. And Sammy Smith out of Johnston, Iowa, will be behind the wheel of the number 18 TMC Toyota for Kyle Busch Motorsports. Mark McFarlane will be on top of the pit box.
Regular crew chief Chad Johnston's on the box again for DGR. David Gillen Racing Ford, number 17 for Taylor Gray, comes from Mooresville, North Carolina. And then out of New Braunfels, Texas, comes Parker Chase in the number 15 Venturini Toyota. And he's got Doug George as his crew chief on the Ontivity Toyota.
Okay. Dick Doheny will be on top of the pit box for the Hillenburg number 12 Chevrolet, driven by D.L. Wilson out of Mark, Texas, and with a sponsor, Heart of Texas Speedway. And Zachary Tinkle is behind the wheel of the number 11. He hails from Speedway, Indiana, and he's always racing for rescues. He'll be in the Hillenburg Ford with Andy Hillenburg on top of the pit box.
The Hillenburg Toyota number 10, that is Tim Monroe, shows himself crew chiefing there. Always like to see that as they have to work together as a team. But comes out of Elmwood, Illinois with the Fast Track Racing sponsorship. And then one of the Rev Racing machines, the number 6, Rajah Caruth. He hails from Washington, D.C., and he'll have Brad Means helping him out.
Okay. Mason Diaz is back. He'll be driving the number 3, Solid Rock Carriers Crow Ring Recycling Toyota. He hails from Manassas, Virginia. He's driving for Willie Mullins this weekend, and Austin Simmons will be on top of the pit box. Matt Butcher is on top of the pit box for the Max Siegel Rev Racing Chevrolet this weekend with Nick Sanchez from Miami, Florida, behind the wheel of that number 2 Gainbridge Max Siegel Inc. Chevrolet.
And the final entrance that we have on the list, which I believe was 31 drivers, That's the number one of James Finch-owned, Jake Finch-driven, Phoenix Construction Toyota. Comes out of Lynn Haven, Florida, and he brings with him Johnny Allen as his crew chief.
Okay. We covered three series. The ARCA West, just so you know, their next race is October the 1st. The Napa Auto Care 150 at 6:45 Pacific. That's 9:45 Eastern at All American Speedway. That will be available on Flow Racing. And, of course, we will carry the preview of that race just prior to that. So now it is time for us to go to the audio that we have here from Eric Almirola, the driver of the number 10 Stewart Haas Racing Ford. Joining him in this media interview is Cale Cairns. He's from Electric Vehicle Center Plant Manager for Blue Oval City. And you are going to learn more about what that is, as that is Eric Almirola's new sponsor. So we'll hear what he has to say in this interview coming up right now.
All right, joining us this afternoon, we're joined by driver of the number 10 Blue Oval City Ford Mustang, Eric Almirola. And also we're being joined by Cale Cairns, who's the Electric Vehicle Center Plant Manager for Blue Oval City. We announced about 45 minutes ago that Blue Oval City is going to be on Eric's car this weekend for the annual Bristol Night Race. And, Cale, if I could just kick it off with you briefly, just for those who may not have seen this release, can you just kind of describe a little bit about what Blue Oval City is and just kind of what this opportunity means for you?
Good afternoon, everybody. Really enjoy the opportunity to talk with races, Eric, about Ford, as you know, is leading the electric revolution with strong plans to create a sustainable automotive manufacturing ecosystem at Blue Oval City. We have an electric vehicle center. We have a battery plant and other suppliers that together will be producing the next generation battery electric truck for Ford while creating 6,000 jobs. So really excited to be showcasing Blue Oval City on Eric's Ford Mustang this weekend.
And Eric, the playoffs are off to a start with these non-playoff drivers who've won the first two races. I'm sure you'd like to make it a third this weekend, but just what's it like for you to have a new partner on board for this weekend?
Well, it's awesome. You know, obviously Ford has been a great supporter of mine over the last 11 years. That's the only cup car I've ever driven. You know, has been a Ford. So that's been fun over the last 11 years. And then to see the progression Ford Motor Company has made over those 11 years of me driving a Blue Oval, and to now represent them this weekend at Bristol with Blue Oval City, and what a phenomenal facility they're gonna build there. And I just hope that the $5.5 billion that they've committed to build this facility doesn't take away from our racing program. Is that okay, Cale?
All right. If you've got a question for either Eric or Cale, by all means, raise your hand or send me your question in the chat, and I'm happy to ask it for you. Let's kick it off here first with Corinne Kennedy. Hey, Corinne, welcome to the call. Ask your question for Eric or Cale. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks. Yeah, this is Corinne Kennedy, Commercial Appeal here in Memphis. Eric, you mentioned you've been with Ford for 11 years. You know, you said you feel like you're part of the Ford family. So what does it mean that you're going to be representing kind of the future of the company this weekend at such an iconic race?
Well, it means a lot. And, you know, to do it in the playoffs with a large spotlight on us, you know, do it in Bristol, Tennessee. The new plant is going to be in Memphis, Tennessee. It's just a really cool weekend and a great opportunity for me. Like you said, over the last 11 years, I've seen a lot of progression out of Ford Motor Company. I remember getting to go down in the basement of Ford headquarters, and I had to give my cell phone to this security guard and wasn't allowed to take my cell phone in there. And I got to go see the clay model of the Ford GT when they were getting ready to come out with that. And then also got to go down there and see when they were developing the Bronco a year before anybody else even knew about it. And same thing, electric Mustang, get to see that. So I've been able to see the future and the growth of Ford Motor Company over the years through my relationship with them. And it has been so much fun for me to kind of be able to see behind the curtain. And, you know, here's another opportunity to be involved in the future of Ford Motor Company and to, you know, to be able to cast the spotlight on Blue Oval City and what a phenomenal place that they're going to build there. They're going to create between there and Blue Oval SK 11,000 new American jobs. It's just incredible, and it's been really enjoyable to be along for the ride throughout the journey.
Thank you, Corinne. Let's go to Bob Pockers. Hey, Bob.
Hey, Eric. I'm curious, do you feel these last eight races, are you working toward 2023, or are there too many changes with the car and everything that what you're learning now isn't as focused on 2023 as it might have been in previous years?
No, we're working really hard on 2023, Bob. You know, the last six races before the playoffs, we were really trying to just kind of massage on things and trying to take race cars that we felt like were capable of running 7th to 12th and, like, fine-tune it, hoping that we would hit on that, you know, missing ingredient to get to where we needed to be a winning race car. And now that we're out of the playoffs, we've really used this opportunity as a team, the 10-team individually. We've used it as an opportunity to kind of swing for the fences on stuff that is way outside of the box on anything that we looked at previously. And it's also, I feel like, a big learning curve for our organization. We have a lot of great engineers, you know, here that have a lot of bright ideas. And oftentimes throughout the middle part of the season, you know, we would shoot them down because we're like, man, we can't try that. We only have 15 minutes of practice, and what if it doesn't work? If it doesn't work, we can't get it back out of the car. So we weren't really willing to take that risk, and especially, you know, early summer months, we were right on the line for the cutoff for the playoffs on points. And so we were just trying to be consistent, and we couldn't really take that risk. And so now, you know, not being in the playoffs, and I feel like we all kind of held hands and, you know, don't really care about finishing 17th, 18th, 19th in points. Doesn't really matter as much to us as much as it does to learn as much as we can going into next year so that we can go race for a championship next year. You know, Drew and I had that conversation with our team after we missed the playoffs at Daytona. We came back to the shop and we talked and we said, hey, I remember a handful of years ago, the 22 car missed the playoffs and came back the next year and won the championship. So, you know, we're not going to get too upset and hang our heads. We're just going to look ahead and focus on getting better for next year.
Thanks. That might be.
Okay, we'll let it in there. But your thoughts about the new sponsor for Eric Almirola, this is part of the future, and NASCAR is headed in this same direction, Jay.
Yeah, there's several things there. One, to see the commitment that, and I didn't realize it, that Eric Almirola had been with Ford his entire Cup Series career there as a full-time driver. So for them to have chosen him as that driver and Stuart Haas Racing is huge. I like the commitment a manufacturer is making. I think we've seen this more out of Toyota than anybody, but Ford making that same commitment as far as to the team, not just by providing the cars and whatever, but also with sponsorship and promoting it. So I really like to see that. I don't know. I know there was some allusion to the fact that maybe this is why Eric came back for another year plus. We don't know that yet, but did not retire after this year as was originally planned. And if so, I mean, it's certainly a worthwhile cause to represent the Ford brand, the Blue Oval.
Yeah, this certainly would be a great reason for Eric Almirola to change his mind about retirement and to stay in NASCAR and to stay with Ford, for that matter, there at Stuart Haas Racing. So, yeah, I think there is an allusion to that. I didn't hear the rest of the interview. There's actually the interview in its entirety is 22.42 seconds, 22 minutes, 42 seconds. So we only listened to maybe a third of that. So there's more to this interview that maybe more was revealed a little bit later. But I think this is good news. I know some fans are not really excited to hear about electric cars coming to NASCAR, but I think it's going to be a fact of life. I don't think there's going to be much of a choice at some point. And so to start introducing this within the NASCAR ranks, I think, is a good thing.
Well, I'm one of those. I know we've had that hot topic discussion before. I am not in favor of it, but I am a NASCAR fan. And like you said, it's reality. You know, no matter what it be, the manufacturers coming in that maybe fans aren't a fan of, or the change over to the new car, the next-gen car, it becoming an electric car, you're either a fan and we're going to continue to support it and watch it, or you're not, I guess, from that aspect. But he mentioned several things there of getting to see the future, if you will, by seeing some of the things Ford was producing before they came out to the public. I thought that was really cool. What do you call it? A perk, a great perk of the sponsorship deal he's had.
No kidding.
That'd be a pretty cool perk to have.
Yeah, that is an excellent perk to have and a good reason to come out of retirement, because it's kind of a golden opportunity, if you will, Jay.
The other thing that he answered, and I believe it was Bob Pockris that asked, with this next-gen car, talking about how much more you can plan for next year with this car the way it is, and not a whole lot of playroom on the spec parts, but that they are still focused and trying to find the things they can work on and what will work, as they are now, as you mentioned, throughout the last final races, being that they weren't in the playoffs. You know, he said going into the playoffs, we were still trying to get the car right to make it. They unfortunately didn't. They are looking at 2023 and beyond as far as now what they can do. So, what word? Bad that they didn't make the playoffs, but being that they are out and they can do that research and development, if you will, for the entirety of Stuart Haas Racing, so that all four teams will benefit come next year.
Absolutely, and that has to be an inspiration for Eric Almirola as well. They mentioned the 22 car not making the playoffs that one year and then coming back the very next year and winning that championship. It sounds like they've really put a lot of effort into supporting that effort in the 2023 season. And how great would that be for Eric Almirola to win a championship as he considers his retirement at some point in the future here?
Yeah, very true. And, you know, we saw the reemergence, if you will, of Kevin Harvick and the entire Stuart Haas Racing Ford team. They were kind of lacking in the middle of the season. They certainly did come on strong, just come up a little bit short for Eric Almirola. Kevin Harvick able to race his way in, though. So, like I said, you got to take the positive that you got one in the playoffs, and I'm sure they're helping put – fourth effort towards that championship run, but also then some of the teams can work towards next year so that they all benefit. So, like I said, you got to take the positive, and like you said, they come back with a vengeance next year.
Exactly right. Okay, it's time for us to move on now to our truck series preview of the race at Bristol Motor Speedway. I'm on the cup page. I want to go to the truck page. The race is actually going to take place tomorrow night after the Arca Menards Series race. It'll be Thursday, September the 15th at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. They'll race a distance of 200 laps, and they'll have three stages ending on lap 55, lap 110, which will also be 55 laps, and then 90 laps for the last stage ending on lap 200. It will be televised on Fox Sports 1 with radio coverage on MRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. This is the precise reason, along with the Arca Menards Series race tomorrow night, why we're doing a podcast today prior to these races, so that we can actually sit back and enjoy the races tomorrow night. There's a lot going on here. They're going to do a virtual crew chief meeting and driver meeting. The garage is going to open on Thursday late morning. They'll have the inspection process that will start from 11:30 and continue until 4 o'clock. They'll have a virtual rookie meeting and another virtual driver and crew chief meeting. The practice for groups 1 and 2 will take place at 4:30 to 5:05 p.m., and then they'll have the qualifying. It is an impound race from 5:05 to 6 p.m. It'll be single vehicle, two laps, all entries, and then the race actually starts at 9 p.m. It will be a distance of 106 miles. So a pretty full day there tomorrow for the truck series. Let's take a look at the entry list here for this race. there's quite a few drivers. I'm just checking to see if there's anybody unusual on the list here, Jay. There's a TBA for Rayum Brothers, number 43.
Yeah, I'm trying to get it pulled up myself here. I know we got 37 drivers and teams entered, so we will have one that misses the race. And the fact that we highlighted each of the series running at Bristol Motor Speedway, but in a different position. The truck series here, they just ended their first round and eliminated two drivers. This is their first race of the round of eight. Cup series, they're ending their round of 12. Or 16, sorry, to go to the round of 12. And then the Xfinity Series is ending their regular season. So a little bit different position for each of these series here. The Truck Series first race, very important. We've seen that get off to a good start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. We've seen the Truck Series get off to a good start, and they're already in their next round. And it is going to be interesting. On this entry list, Young's Motorsports has a couple of to-be-announced entries here, the number 202 and the number 20. And then Rayum Brothers has a couple of to-be-announced entries for the number 33 as well as the number 43. Other than that, I really don't see anything unusual about this entry list, Jay? Jay, I got the right name.
There are a couple of ones that I'd like to hit. We talked about Jake Garcia from the late models. He will be in the McNally Higelman Racing number 35 with Chad Norris, looks like, as his crew chief. Yep, there we go. Norris is his crew chief. Excuse me. Caden Honeycutt on the On Point Motorsports, number 30, with Will Bradford as the crew chief of that Toyota. And then we talked about Rajah Caruth, and he'll be driving for Spire Motorsports in the number 7, and Kevin Mannion as his crew chief.
Yeah, that's really cool to see. And then John Hunter Nemechek is back. I know he's been running the circuit. He's one of the drivers that are being affected by the switch with Kyle Busch Motorsports, and I'm sure we'll talk more about that. Connor Mosack is in that Brett Holmes Racing number 32 this weekend as well. It is going to be interesting. Drivers are going to want to kind of get that win in this first race of the next round. 37 drivers and teams, 36 spots. So as Jay mentioned, one of these drivers is going to miss the race. I'm trying to see if there's any other info here that we can share with people.
Well, and one thing I look at of how important maybe this round more than any others of a good run at Bristol. The next race in the round is a Talladega 250 on October 1st. That's a wide open wild card. And then your cutoff race is Homestead, Miami. So you don't want to be going into Homestead, Miami in any kind of crunch and need to win or extreme point situation. And that Talladega race in between, I think this one may be the very most important first round race of any of the rounds.
Yeah, that's true. Let's kind of refresh everybody's memory of this reseeding of the Truck Series point standings after two drivers missed the cutoff. That was Carson Hocifar and Matt Crafton. They were eliminated after Kansas. And so now we have eight drivers left. Four of those drivers will be eliminated prior to the race at Phoenix, which is the championship race for the Final Four.
All right. Well, we start at the top, and Zane Smith goes back to the top. Did not pick up a victory there in that round, but still goes back to the top of the points with 37 playoff points. So he sits at 3,037. Chandler Smith did win a race in that round to advance and lock himself in and picked up five more points. So he recedes at second with 3,028 points. John Hunter Nemechek, same boat, had picked up a victory. Probably going to move on in points anyway, but the victory gives him those 5 points. He starts at 3,024. So you're 13 points, just the difference between the top three. Fourth is Ben Rhodes at 3,017. Stuart Friesen at 3,013. Then you got Ty Majeski, 3,008. Grant Infinger, 3,007, as well as Christian Eckes at 3,007. And those are your eight drivers. Right now, Stuart Friesen from 13 through 8 and 7s of Majeski, Enfinger, and Eckes are the ones below the cut line. The first driver above them, Ben Rhodes, only 4 points ahead. And I talk about Grant Enfinger. He's the one that won the first race of the first round. Could have very well been with Matt Crafton or Carson Hocifar as seeing if they made that cut. That victory ensured he moved on.
Yes, indeed, and I would look for Grant Enfinger to have a good run this weekend as well at Bristol Motor Speedway. He is one. He is a tough competitor, and especially when the chips are down, he puts his best foot forward. He was in the same situation coming into the first round, and he was able to get that first win in the first race of the first round. We're now in the first race of the second round. We'll see if he can make that happen again before the elimination race. So, only four drivers will be eliminated in this next round, and that's kind of unusual from the other two series. Usually they eliminate two at a time. But in the Truck Series, this is the round where four drivers will be eliminated when we get to the Final Four at Phoenix.
And I look at it, I know we talked about it a little bit, you and I, Sharon. Stuart Friesen certainly didn't have the race we expected this past week. So far here in the playoffs, we haven't heard a whole lot from Christian Eckes. And those two are under the cut line as it is right now. Chandler Smith, John Hunter Nemechek, your top guys, winning races as well as being ahead in points. You gotta be on top of your game when it comes to the playoffs in any series, but especially in this Truck Series.
Yes, indeed. There is no room for relaxing especially once the playoffs begin. These guys have to put their best foot forward. But it puts a lot of pressure on these guys, too, because they don't want to let their team down. They don't want to let their sponsors down. And they want to put their best foot forward. But they're also human beings, and mistakes are going to happen. It sometimes comes down to who makes the fewest number of mistakes over who advances and who doesn't advance. So that's going to be something to watch this weekend out at Bristol Motor Speedway in this truck series.
The other thing I look at when we talk about it being at Bristol, there's several drivers that are non-playoff drivers that could play spoiler. And I got to start with one that was in the playoffs but is no longer, actually both of them. Carson Hocevar, I didn't pull his stat line up. I was going to look and see how many second-place finishes he does have. But he could be one to still pick up a victory throughout this year, as he has been ever so close. And you can never count out Matt Crafton, a veteran of the sport. He's upset he's not in the playoffs anymore. Certainly would like to play spoiler and still pick up some victories throughout the end of the year here.
Yes, without a doubt. They definitely want to try to pick up as many points as they possibly can going into these playoffs, and especially as early in a round as they possibly can, to take kind of some of that pressure off of themselves for moving into that next round. So the earlier they can do that, the less pressure they have for the other two races. So it's going to be fun to watch, without much doubt. Now, there's let's see if there's any news that we need to bring up here in the truck series. Oh, yes, there is some news here. The truck series was added to the All-Star Weekend at North Wilkesboro Speedway for 2023. So you can see the truck series that weekend as well. As I'm trying to see here if the Xfinity, I thought they said 3-day event. I think the Xfinity series may be racing there as well.
Well, I know we have that on our hot topics. Yeah, the NASCAR announces the 2023 NASCAR National Series schedules. That is a big highlight for the Camping World, which will now become Craftsman Truck Series, to be added to the highlight or added to the All-Star Weekend. Also, they're returning to the Milwaukee Mile as back in business, the NASCAR business with the Milwaukee Mile for the Truck Series.
Yes, they are. I wanted to see here. I'm just quick reviewing the schedule here. I don't see North Wilkesboro on the schedule for the Xfinity Series. So I guess that answers that question.
I'm thinking, I know Marcus Smith alluded to several events. I'm thinking that one might be either maybe an ARCA series, a modified. I think the modifieds would be a great addition to that weekend if I were in charge. But that's a personal opinion for sure. Or we might see one of the cars late models, one of those series. They had a great showing there in this North Wilkesboro revitalization program. They might get rewarded as being part of that All-Star Weekend.
Yes, and to the point that you brought up as well, the Milwaukee Mile returning to the schedule for the Truck Series, I think that's awesome news, and definitely looking forward to that. Now, from Kansas, there were two truck crew chiefs that earned penalties, the number 15 Ford driven by Tanner Gray and the number 61 Toyota Chase Purdy. Were each found with one lug nut loose after the Kansas race. Mike Hillman Jr., crew chief for the number 15 DGR racing outfit, and Matt Lucas, crew chief for Hattori Racing, their number 61 entry, were each fined $2,500, as the rule book says that those tires and wheels must be secured properly. So two lug nut penalties coming out of Kansas for those two organizations. And then, of course, the Kyle Busch Motorsports moving to Chevrolet for 2023 is another big news story that we'll talk more about in Hot Topics.
Well, and I know we still got to wait on some information with that. They don't have all the T's crossed and the I's dotted, but that is the plan that they move to Chevrolet. And I don't know. We'll get into it in Hot Topics, but I don't know how that affects drivers like Chandler Smith and John Hunter Nemechek down the road.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how all of this plays out. Okay, let's go ahead and move on now to the Xfinity Series at Bristol Motor Speedway. They'll be racing the Foot City 300 on Friday night. Again, these are Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night races this weekend. Friday night is the Xfinity Series at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time on USA Network. They'll have practice on Friday, September the 16th, 2:35 to 3:10 p.m. Qualifying is Friday, September the 16th at 3:10 to 4 o'clock. Again, it's an impound, single vehicle, two laps, all entries qualifying event. Radio coverage will be available on PRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. Let's take a look at the entry list here and see if there's anything that stands out on this entry list.
Well, we start with there's 41 cars on the entry list for Friday's Food City 300 Xfinity Series race there at Bristol Motor Speedway, which unfortunately means three cars will fail to qualify. So got to be aware of that. And there are definitely some ones to highlight here.
Yes, indeed. We've got notables in the 02 is Sage Karam. Number 5 will be Brandon Brown. Number 6 will be driven by Bobby McCarty. The number 13, Chad Fincham. Jeffrey Earnhardt's back in the number 26. Kyle Weatherman will be behind the wheel of the number 34. Patrick Emmerling will drive the number 35. Alex LeBay driving the number 36. The number 38 will be driven by C.J. McLaughlin. The number 44, Ryan Ellis. Number 45 is Stefan Parsons. Nick Sanchez will be behind the wheel of the number 48. Driving the number 77 will be Ronnie Bassett Jr. Matt Mills will be in the number 78. And Josh Williams will be behind the wheel of that number 92.
Definitely some interesting things there. We've seen Sage Karam make some starts road racing. To see him at Bristol, certainly going to be interesting. You talked about Brandon Brown moving over to the number 5. I know we've talked about that a couple of times. Sponsorship works the way it works, the back and forth, doing what's best for that team. So we'll have to look to see who's in the actual number 68. But Nick Sanchez in at number 48 for Alpha Prime. I like this. I've said if they could get a full-time deal put together for a driver, and I think throughout the year they've kind of been checking on drivers, testing them, giving them auditions, and Nick Sanchez is the one that's going to be able to showcase his talent this weekend.
That is so true. A lot to look forward to here. I think we've highlighted all of the people that are kind of additions to the Xfinity Series. I want to just mention Jeremy Clements, as you may recall, had a win recently, and that win was not taken away, but he was eliminated from the playoffs. Well, they appealed the penalty and won the appeal. So Jeremy Clements is back in the series playoffs for the playoff season. So that was really good news this week for Jeremy Clements and his race team.
It was. And honestly, I know with the Kyle Busch thing, we kind of knew was coming and been talking about for a while. This deal with this overturn of that penalty might have been the biggest news we got this week, truthfully, because it does, as you mentioned, restores that win completely. And he is now in the Xfinity Series playoffs. I feel so bad for Ryan Sieg. Going into this, we were talking about, what was it? I think he was 12 points up, going to have to be watching his competitor races stay ahead of him. He is now 19 points back because of this with the Jeremy Clements going in.
Yes, unfortunately, one driver had to be bounced in order for Jeremy Clements to be put back in. So let's look at the standings now as they stand for the Xfinity Series, Jay.
Well, and I'm looking on here. It doesn't have it updated here with Jeremy Clements.
I would
Clements
go to NASCAR.com.
Okay, let me see if I can pull that up real quick. While I'm doing that, I did want to mention there the – oh, I pulled up the wrong one. 1 second. NASCAR. Yeah, I was looking at the one-off J-Ski, and I saw it hadn't updated anyway with that Jeremy
right,
Clements deal.
Right, but they have updated over at NASCAR.com.
Yeah, okay.
And we are working without the news and notes this week. They have not come out yet, so Jay and I are kind of winging it here, trying to give you what we feel is the most important information going into these races this weekend.
Well, and with just like we talk about with the availability to watch different races, we have a lot of different information and places we can pull from. You know, normally we do run from the news and notes there that gets posted anyway on J-Ski. So this has been a little bit different, but I think we're doing an okay job. I'd be doing better if I could get the Xfinity Series. I got the Cup Series standings up. Let me get the Xfinity.
Usually up
there
at the
go.
Top, you can identify which series you want.
Oh, there. Yeah, you're right. I didn't click on the Xfinity one first. That's why.
Okay.
All right. Come on.
You want me to go ahead and get started?
I'll just point this out. I don't have Xfinity Internet, so maybe that's the problem.
Oh, I don't either. I actually have a fiber optic Internet service, which I absolutely love. I've not had any problems with it since I got it.
Put that in there to try and push the sponsor.
Yeah, there you go. I will say... this is the season finale for the Xfinity Series, so this is the last chance for these drivers to try to get a win to get in to the playoffs, because the next race is going to be a playoff event for the Xfinity Series.
It will be, and I'll take a look at how this will shuffle up here once we do the reseeding. Right now, they have Noah Gregson listed as the points leader at 2,045. Followed by Ty Gibbs at 2040, then A.J. Allmendinger at 2032. This don't make no sense. Oh, because that's under the playoff. All right, slide back over. Okay, well, I'll come back and look at that in a minute, but.
What's not making sense to you?
What? Oh, because it's not lined up right. Okay, I got it straight now. I don't know why these. A.J. Allmendinger is currently your points leader at 1,003. Ty Gibbs, second position at 965. Justin Allgaier, third at 948. Noah Gregson, 931. Fifth place, Josh Berry, 866. Austin Hill at 769. We talked a little bit. We're going to talk about it more. Brandon Jones right now in the seventh spot, 756. Then Sam Mayer, Riley Herbst, and Daniel Hemric. You know, this one doesn't put him in it, Sheldon Creed, or Jeremy Clements.
Well, that's because it's not the reseeded. Jeremy Clements is below the cut line right now, but he does have
the
win.
Got the win. Okay. That's part of what was throwing me. Okay, so Riley Herbst, Daniel Hemric, Landon Castle in the 11th spot. I see what you're saying. You're right. Ryan Seed actually is 12th in points, whereas Jeremy Clements is in 16th, but with that victory does bump up and lock himself in, and that again was restored after the overturn of the penalty. So now Ryan Seed and Sheldon Creek. What's that?
If you want to reset the rank to the projected playoff lineup, AJ Allmendinger is in line to get that regular season championship at Bristol. But they've got a projected playoff rank here, too. If you want to reset that, you'll see what the projected playoff ranking is.
And that's what, when I started, that was what was messing me up, was because that's the page I actually started on. So I was confused as to that. So yeah, let me play with that. I see where the buttons are now. As you mentioned, then it will be AJ Allmendinger who picks up the regular season championship, most likely. It's not guaranteed yet. But with the reseeding, it would be Noah Gregson with those five race wins that goes to the top with 2045, Ty Gibbs 2040, and AJ Allmendinger, even picking up the 15 bonus points, would go to third at 2032. Gets real tight there, Justin Allgaier at 2030. Now, as Sharon said, this is projected. We still have one race left where they can get the two stage points as well as 5 points for winning. And then the final rundown of the top 10 in the regular season championship are awarded points. So this is just projected. Josh Berry, then Austin Hill at 2016, Brandon Jones at 2010. Here it shows moving from 16th in driver points would start eighth in playoff is Jeremy Clements with the 5 bonus points for winning the race, along with Sam Mayer. Then you got Daniel Hemric, Riley Herbst, and Landon Castle rounding out the field. Now, again, this could all change. We could see Sheldon Creeder, Ryan Sieg win a race as well. Then it gets really interesting, as that would be Landon Castle, who's got the pressure on him to maintain.
Yes, a lot can change in this race at Bristol. It is, again, their season finale. A lot of these drivers are racing hard in this race in order to get themselves in position to be in the playoffs. The best way for them to move on is if they can get a win, especially those drivers that are at the bottom of the top 12 or those drivers that are below that cut line. Their best bet is to get a win at Bristol to put themselves in. And unfortunately, Landon Castle is the guy that's on that cut line that could get bumped out unless he's able to go out there and get the win himself.
Well, and certainly a great year for Landon Castle. They're running with Colic Racing full-time. I know he's kind of had his ups and downs. James has picked him quite a bit this year and done well with him in our fantasy points. I'm so happy for Landon Castle. Colic Racing has built such an organization there. Mentioned AJ Allmendinger right now leading the championship standings.
Yes, indeed. Now, one of the news stories coming out of the Xfinity series here that we will talk about on Hot Topic Sound Off is Brandon Jones is joining Junior Motorsports for the 2023 series season. He's going to be behind the wheel of the number 9 Chevrolet for Junior Motorsports next year, signing an agreement with Junior Motorsports for the Xfinity series season. So Jones is a 5-time winner and 8-year veteran of the series. He qualified for the playoff in 6 of the last 7 seasons. In addition to his 5 wins, including a popular victory at Martinsville, Jones claims 35 top 5 and 97 top 10 finishes and a best points effort of 6th in 2022. So that was really big news for Brandon Jones this week.
Certainly, and you're right, we're definitely going to talk about that in Hot Topics. We knew that Junior Motorsports looking for a driver for that number 9, as Noah Gregson has moved on to the Cup Series, signing on with GMS Petty Racing. So some things changing there. And I think this leads to the Kyle Busch JGR situation as well. Brandon Jones leaving JGR, they got possibly 2 open seats there in the Xfinity Series, 1 for sure now. We talked about Sammy Smith, what he's been doing, getting some limited starts, the 2-time ARCA East champion. Might we see him full-time then in that number 19? Don't know.
Well, we're about to find out, I'm sure. You know, it's interesting. Once one domino falls, it seems like a bunch of dominoes fall after. So, and that certainly has held true this week with different announcements coming out this week after the Kyle Busch KBM announcement. Okay, we are pretty much done, unless you have something more that you want to add to the Xfinity series, Jay.
Yeah, well, actually, 2 quick things here. I mentioned Brandon Brown going into the number 5. It's going to be Chris Wright in the number 68 Brandon-built Motorsports Chevrolet there, with Hummer EV as the sponsorship. Doug Randolph will stay as the crew chief. And then there was another one I just had here. Michael Walter Brewing is going to be sponsoring Dawson Cram. Dawson Cram announced today that he'll return to the NASCAR Xfinity Series, driving the number 47 Chevrolet for Mike Harmon here in the Food City 300. So a couple other ones to kind of watch and keep your eye on.
Yes, indeed. Okay, we're going to go ahead and move on to the Cup Series now. They're racing the Bass Pro Shops Night Race at Bristol Motor Speedway this Saturday night under the lights, September the 17th at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Again, it will be on the USA Network, radio coverage on PRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. Practice will be from 4:30 to 5:20 p.m. Eastern. That's Friday, September the 16th. That will be televised on USA, as well as qualifying at 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. on Friday, September the 16th. So we'll look forward to watching that race. The entry list, Jay, you want to cover that?
All right, scrolling down to that. I know I kind of proposed this question on I think it was on our fantasy group. Which is a better exciting race, the Daytona race for the end of the season or this first round cutoff race being the night race at Bristol?
Yeah, there's going to be 36 teams for 40 spots, so everybody should be able to make it. Yaley, Allmendinger, Gibbs, and Balicki are all scheduled to race in this race, but there is a full entry list here.
And that's always good to see, you know, at the Cup level at 36. We've seen that throughout the year. I know that was one of those adjustments that we had to make as they cut that field down, but it puts the best racing action on the track. I understand NASCAR's decision to it. I don't see any others as I scroll down here out of the ordinary.
Yeah, I don't either.
J.J. Yaley in the number 15 for Rick Ware Racing. It will be A.J. Allmendinger in the number 16 for Colic Racing. I know they've been rotating drivers throughout the year, so the short track here of Bristol is falls into A.J. Allmendinger's wheelhouse. Mentioned the 23 of Ty Gibbs. Yeah, those are the only few there that really stand out that aren't your standard drivers. In case fans haven't heard it or understand it, the Ty Gibbs had been filling in the number 45 for Kurt Busch. When the playoffs started, they swapped Bubba Wallace and Ty Gibbs. Ty Gibbs now running in the number 23. Bubba Wallace, and doing a great job of it, filling in the number 45 to run for the Owners Championship, and he has already advanced that team into the next round.
Okay. I'm going to check out the statistical notes here. As far as the Cup Series playoff fastbacks at Bristol, the 2022 season marks the third time that Bristol Motor Speedway has hosted the third race of the Cup playoffs. So this is an elimination race for the Cup Series and just the third Cup Series postseason event all time at the .533-mile track. From 2004 to 2019, Bristol Motor Speedway was scheduled as the 24th race of the regular season. It's also the fifth different track in Cup Series history to host the third race of the playoffs, joining Talladega that did it in 2004 and 5, Kansas 2006 to 10, Dover from 2011 to 17, and Charlotte, the Roval, from 2018 and 19. A total of 14 different drivers have won the third race of the playoffs, led by Jimmy Johnson, who did it 2008 and 13, Greg Biffle in 2007 and 10, Tony Stewart in 2006 and 9, Kevin Harvick in 2015 and 20, each with two wins. No non-playoff driver has won the third Cup playoff race at Bristol Motor Speedway in 20 or 21, Charlotte Motor Speedway Road Course in 2018 or 19, or at Dover in 2011 to 2017. Two non-playoff drivers have won the third race in the NASCAR Cup Series playoffs when the event was held at Kansas from 2006 to 10. That was Tony Stewart, who was ranked 11th in points when he won the 2006 Kansas playoff race. Also, Greg Biffle was ranked 14th in points when he won the 2007 Kansas playoff race. Only one non-playoff driver has won the third race in the Cup Series playoffs when held at Talladega Super Speedway from 2004 to 5. NASCAR Hall of Famer Dale Jarrett was 14th in points when he won the 2005 Talladega playoff race. So some interesting stats there.
They are, and I'd be real curious to see if that changes this year, as we have seen two non-playoff drivers. The car 45 was, as I mentioned, Bubba Wallace, but he was still a non-playoff driver, as well as Eric Jones, winning the first two playoff races. And I believe that was the first time that Darlington had a non-playoff driver winner. So we could see that change this weekend at Bristol. It's unlikely, but we've seen several things we thought unlikely this year happen. So who knows?
Exactly right. Here's some other stats that you might be interested in. In total, the winner of the third race in the Cup Series playoffs has gone on to win the title four different times. Yet it has only happened once since the elimination style format was instituted in 2014. Last season, Kyle Larson won the third race of the Cup Series playoffs at Bristol and then went on to win his first series title. His Bristol playoff victory was the first of a record-tying five postseason wins in a single season. He won at Bristol, the Charlotte Road Course, Texas, Kansas, and Phoenix, tying NASCAR Hall of Famer Tony Stewart, who had five playoff wins in 2011. Did you find where I'm at?
Yep. I'd have known the answer if that had been a trivia question. I know we've talked about that several times. A heck of a battle between Tony Stewart and Carl Edwards that year.
Exactly right. In 2020, Kevin Harvick won the third race of the Cup Series playoffs at Bristol, but finished the season fifth in the final standings. And when Bristol Motor Speedway's road course hosted the third race of the playoffs in 2018 and 19, none of the event winners went on to win the title in that same season. When Dover hosted the third race in the playoffs in 2011 to 17, two drivers went on and to win the title that same season. In 2012, that was Brad Keselowski. He won the third race of the playoffs at Dover and went on to win his first series title. It was Keselowski's lone win during the 2012 playoffs. In 2013, it was Jimmy Johnson winning the third race of the playoffs at Dover. He then went on to win his sixth series title. It was the first of two playoff wins that season. He won at the second Dover race as well as the second Texas race.
It's really interesting to look at that when you look at these statistics of different drivers as well as the different scenarios that have played out. Sometimes it is a key pivotal race, that third race of the playoffs, no matter what track it be at. Some of them it did play into the fact of which tracks it was at, and I think Jimmy Johnson seemed to have some very likable tracks that he was very secure at, Dover being one of them. I know Martinsville and Charlotte. So it kind of plays in, and I think that's where I like what NASCAR's kind of been doing of trying to at least change that up a little bit. We'll have to look at that when we look at next year's schedule.
Okay. And there's a lot of really great stats here over at jskis.com if you want to check that out. Again, I always enjoy looking back at what's happened historically during the playoffs. It's always some interesting information, especially if you're looking for who do I want to pick to win this race. And I'm not going to ask you, Jay, because I know we're still trying to decide that.
Well, actually, and I think that was on the truck series as well. I was going to ask you. I think
I know I'm up. I'm still waiting to make my choice.
Yeah, you got Okay, Cup Series and Truck Series. Yeah, I was going to ask you in the Truck Series segment there, as you are the one where to make your next pick for the Truck Series.
Oh, okay. I will, I promise. I just want to get some more information before I make that decision.
Well, and I know I always feel like maybe we have a little bit of advantage when we do the preview shows. Some of the statistics we get kind of sways me back and forth as well.
Well, and not only that, but I am so far behind. I need as much help as I can possibly get this year.
Well, going with that, when we look at this, the point standings for the Cup Series, four that would be under the cut line. Kyle Busch is back 2 points. Austin Dillon back three. Chase Briscoe back nine. Kevin Harvick is in a must-win position at minus 35. He'd have to not only get in those top 12, but surpass three other drivers, one of them being Kyle Busch. So you can relate to Kevin Harvick there. And I don't think, at least in the Truck Series, I'm that far off of you, so I can't say a whole lot to help you out.
Well, and of all people to compare me to, Kevin Harvick, that's kind of funny.
Why, are you saying you've been cheating?
No. If I was cheating, I'd be a lot better than last place.
Well, that's probably, yeah. Would hope so. You're right.
Okay. So anything else you want to make sure we mention here before we move on?
I just wanted to highlight. Yeah, I know we got that coming up. Trying to look at, I know talking about just above the cut line there, it's Austin Cindric and Tyler Reddick. Reddick obviously in a bad position, been really strong. He's one of the ones only 2 points up on the cut line, as well as Austin Cindric. So we are nowhere near determining those 12 that are going to advance. The other one is Daniel Suarez. He's up in 10th place at 6 points up. Above that, Ross Chastain at plus 26. I'd say that's about where your safety net is.
Oh,
I'm sure
you.
It's not real super comfortable, but the real battle is going to be Daniel Suarez, Tyler Reddick, Austin Cindric above the line, and then Kyle Busch, Austin Dillon, Chase Briscoe. But again, Kevin, I don't know if you saw the interview he did with Bob Pockrest when asked about it. Said he's in a must-win situation, how he felt about it, and Kevin Harvick's response was better than most. He runs good at Bristol, so look out.
Watch out. Okay, so yes, thank you. I'm glad you brought up where we are with the points, because this is an elimination race, Jay, and so these point standings are very, very important, and they will reset again after the Bristol race. So this is the third race of the first round, and we've already seen where Chase Elliott was the regular season champion, and that was no guarantee that he was going to stay at the top of the point standings. That's all changed now.
Yeah, actually, the first two races, and this is where how important that is. He built up 40 playoff points. Right now, he is in seventh position. When they recede then, that 40 points, looking through the rest of them, would put him back up at the top of the points by roughly 15 points. Joey Logano is 25. Now, that's not counting what they get this weekend at Bristol, but every round you get to restart with those points you've built up in the regular season. So, you know, like I mentioned, I think it was Ross Chastain, and Tyler Reddick had 12 points built up, but he's right there at the cut line by only plus two. Chase Elliott shouldn't have to worry about that, but it's a possibility, and that's what you build on that throughout the season, how important the regular season is to build those playoff points.
Well, and I think the other thing that it illustrates is how quickly you can lose that advantage if you have a bad race. So, you know, it comes down to trying to make the fewest possible number of mistakes that you possibly can. And it's not just the driver, it's the team as well, and the car that they give to the team, to the driver. So everybody's kind of involved in this, in trying to be as near perfect as they can possibly be. But people make mistakes, And that's what makes all of this so interesting.
You're right, and we do a lot of talking about the driver, but you're absolutely right. It is a team sport, especially when we talk about, and I hate to pick on Martin Truex, but when we're talking about 3 points, that's three positions on a track, how big of an impact the pit crew can have on three positions on the track in any given race.
That is so true. Okay, we are at the top of the hour, and it is time for us to head into our, we've been talking about it all afternoon, we're going to head into our Hot Topic Sound-Off segment, and joining us, Jay, is going to be another member of our Fan for Racing crew, and that is Michael Orzel. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Hello, good to talk to you all in kind of an unusual time.
Yes, it is. But we're free to watch the races tomorrow night, which will be really, really cool. Okay, Mike, I know it's been a big, big news week this week. What do you want to start off with as our hot topic for tonight?
Well, we might as well get it out of the way. We already talked about Kyle Busch to Richard Childress Racing on Monday. We probably don't need to beat that horse again because we covered it pretty well. But there were some other interesting developments at that press conference, namely the future for Tyler Reddick as well as the future for KBM. It definitely were some discussion there.
Yeah, we know that KBM is going to stay with Chevrolet, but we don't know what's going to happen with each of those drivers. So, Jay, your thoughts?
Yeah, and that's something that we don't know as far as specific contracts. Take John Hunter Nemechek, for example. If he was signed to Kyle Busch Motorsports or if he is signed to Toyota. I know he has been a Toyota driver, I understand that, but I don't know if he has a contract with Toyota. So that's certainly going to be interesting. It has a huge impact on what will now be the Craftsman Truck Series next year, as KBM has been a perennial championship contender, most certainly for the owner's championship in Toyota, but also then driver championships with multiple different drivers. And I think, Sharon, you've hit on it all along. That was kind of Toyota's development pipeline through the truck series was through KBM. So this has huge implications throughout all series of NASCAR. We just read it, actually, talking about Sammy Smith in the ARCA East. That is a KBM Motorsports team now, which was a Toyota. So that, too, does that change that brand all the way down? And then you mentioned the other part of it, Tyler Reddick. I know people are still trying to make something, different things happen. I listen to Dave Moody, as I usually do, on SiriusXM Speedway. Right now, they are to have a third team with a charter, from my understanding. Don't know where it's coming from, but that Tyler Reddick will drive for Richard Childress Racing at the Cup Series level, will not be in the number eight, as that is where Kyle Busch is going. But can things change? Possibly. But it sounds like they're saying, hey, we had this commitment. We're going to honor it, you know, through that. It'll be interesting to see, I think, when I talk about that, to me, that's about long-term planning for Richard Childress Racing. I know I put it up of could benefit another team, and I'm going to use Rick Ware Racing. If Richard Childress leases a charter for 1 year for a three-team deal, when that charter goes back to Rick Ware Racing, they benefit from it for up to 3 years based on where it finishes, and we'd think with Tyler Reddick or Kyle Busch, whichever one it goes to, that it would reap some rewards for Rick Ware Racing. That is in monetary amount, as well as not being at the bottom of the list where NASCAR may take it away from them. So now that's if he leases it. If they outright buy a charter, that tells me they're putting into place a long-term plan after Tyler Reddick leaves that they got somebody they want to move up and stay a three-car team. So that's where I think the key element is going to come in, is whether they lease or buy that charter tells you what Richard Childress is planning extremely long-term for the future.
Yes, there are so many layers to peel back on this onion. And I will say one of the things that came out during the media interview is that Richard Childress said that he started looking at Kyle Busch once Tyler Reddick told him that he was going to 23-11 for the 2024 season. So he did not let any grass grow under his feet in looking at an opportunity to put somebody else in that car. So that putting Kyle Busch in that number eight car is what's bouncing Tyler Reddick out into whatever that third charter is going to be. And we'll have to wait for the news to come out on that. But I think it's interesting that Kyle Busch Motorsports is also switching over to Chevrolet. And I think there's a lot of dynamics that are kind of at play with this as well. I know in some of our Hot Topic conversations, I've brought this up before, that some of the executives at Ford moved over to Chevrolet, and we've seen Chevrolet have a bump in their performance this season, and I think that maybe is one of the reasons why. Kyle Busch, I think, is recognizing that as well, and I think that's one of the reasons he's going to a Chevrolet team for next season and beyond. KBM, he's willing to move that over to Chevrolet because, and these things go in cycles. Let me just say that. One year it's Ford up at the front. The next year it's Chevy up at the front. And another year Toyota is up at the front. I think Toyota's on the backside of that curve on the way down, not necessarily down in the dumps or anything, but just not up to par to what we've seen them race in the past. And that's not across the board because we have seen some success from some Toyota cars, but not across the board. Chevrolet, they're seeing a lot of success this season. Having a driver like Kyle Busch and Kyle Busch Motorsports join that Chevrolet fold is just going to enhance the success that that organization as a whole, and I'm talking about the Chevrolet organization as a whole, is experiencing in NASCAR. So Kyle Busch adds to whatever organization he is a part of. So I look for Chevrolet to be one of the top-running series next season. Now, having said that, I will say this. I've been a fan at RCR for a long time. Jeff Burton used to race at RCR. And I will tell you, anytime they've gone to a three-car operation, it's been a little bit rocky. They don't usually have across-the-board success with three cars at RCR. Now, this could be the exception, having Kyle Busch kind of at the center of what's happening at RCR right now. But I have some skepticism from that regard because RCR typically does not do well when they go beyond the two cars. I understand why they have three cars this season. I don't know that, well, we'll have to see how that plays out. I'm not going to make any predictions there because Tyler Reddick is winning at RCR right now, and he's a good driver, and we'll see how all of that unfolds. But as far as KBM and the other drivers, there's not a lot we can actually say about that right now because those drivers are in the process of what Kyle Busch just finished doing, and that's looking at other organizations that they can race for. They've got to decide, are they going to stay in that Toyota fold or are they going to go to another organization as well? Because as you mentioned, some of these drivers have been Toyota Racing Development drivers, and that would be a huge loss, I think, for Toyota if they lose some of these drivers. But when you think about it, what's happening across the board, and one of the things that I've been thinking about is that there's no room at the top for some of these up-and-coming drivers that are coming up through the ranks. Now, there are going to be some drivers that will retire, but a lot of these drivers are hanging on. Eric Almirola just changed his mind about retirement. So we'll have to see how that plays out. But if those drivers leave the Toyota Racing Development fold, I think that's going to be another huge loss for Toyota. And in addition to losing Kyle Busch, it's still a head-scratcher as to why they allowed that to happen with Kyle Busch. But I think that it does not bode well for Toyota at this point to lose some of these up-and-coming drivers if they go to another manufacturer and another team. So we'll see how it plays out. We don't have any inside information on where these drivers are going to go. It's all speculation at this point until they make some announcements. But, Mike, what are some of your thoughts?
Well, first off, regarding Tyler Reddick, it was obviously that was the biggest question going into the announcement yesterday was what is Tyler Reddick's future looking like? And we got a lot of answers there, but there's still a good bit of question. First and foremost, we know it's going to be a third Richard Childress Racing car, but like Jay said, we don't know if it's going to be on a leased charter, a purchased charter, or what kind of an arrangement it's going to be there. Richard Childress Racing currently has two charters for the number 3 and the number 8, as well as two affiliated charters with Petty GMS for the 42 and the 43. It sounds like all four of those charters are spoken for as far as drivers for 2023. Austin Dillon in the 3, Kyle Busch in the 8, Noah Gregson in the 42, and Eric Jones in the 43 are all signed for next year. So I don't think an RCR affiliate charter is going to be available. This comes down to, do they purchase or lease another charter? We don't know yet. The previous purchase price that's been kicked around for a charter is $20 million. And I know Richard Childress has a decent amount of money in his back pocket, but I don't know if he wants to spend $20 million for what could be a short-term thing. Like you said, Sharon, RCR doesn't have the best of luck with fielding 3 competitive race cars. You usually would have 1, maybe 2 be competitive, and then the third one would be way off. And Richard Childress has been around this business for a long time, and he's got a pretty good memory. I'm pretty sure he remembers that maybe 3 charters is more than their organization can chew for a long term. That opens the door to leasing. We're going to have to pay attention to see how that goes. But it is interesting to see that at least temporarily RCR is planning on expanding to that 3-car operation to get their money's worth out of Tyler Reddick. I think that's a smart move. Tyler Reddick is probably one of the best, most promising drivers in the Cup Series right now, at least in terms of continued development and upshot. And as upset as Richard Childress was about the way the 2311 deal went, I think it was a smart idea to not let that get the best of him and not let a talent like Tyler Reddick go before he had to do so at the start of the 2024 season. So great to have a home for Tyler Reddick. With regard to KBM, I think you guys were already doing the show, but Bob Pockers tweeted out that Chandler Smith, Corey Heim, and John Hunter Nemechek are all Toyota drivers who are currently looking for new rides in 2023. I'm not sure if that means that they are obligated to stay in a Toyota or if moving to a Chevrolet is an option for them. However, the move of KBM to Chevrolet does have some serious implications for those Toyota development drivers, namely Nemechek, Smith, and Heim. And what is going to happen with them, we don't really know. It's definitely something we're going to have to pay attention to, and it really depends on openings and availability. There is an opening in the JGR Xfinity series all of a sudden. I'm sure we'll talk about that in a little bit. So that's a potential move for one or more drivers to maybe not go to another truck series team if there's an Xfinity opportunity. But definitely some serious movement in the Xfinity and especially the truck series level as Toyota has more or less just lost their entire development program on the truck side. And speaking of which, what a huge loss for Toyota. It's one thing to lose their flagship driver with Kyle Busch. That happens from time to time. But the fact that Kyle Busch took effectively Toyota's entire development program away with him, it's hard to state how big of a loss that was for them. We just mentioned 3 up-and-coming Toyota development drivers that are now scrambling to try and find a new home for next season, whether that's in a Toyota and they continue to develop along the Toyota pipeline, or if Toyota ends up losing those drivers as well. I understand that business is business, and money does what money does, but I don't know. I wasn't privy to any of these discussions, obviously. I don't know what the numbers were on paper, but you figure Toyota would have fought a little bit harder, if nothing else, to preserve the Kyle Busch Motorsports Truck Series deal and make some sort of a concession where, yes, Kyle Busch can drive a Chevy in the truck series, or sorry, in the Cup Series, but we're going to keep KBM as a Toyota affiliated team, something, anything to preserve their development. But it really feels like the whole rug got pulled out from under Toyota. I think Joe Gibbs Racing is going to be okay next year. We don't know who's going to be driving the 18. Everyone's kind of penciling in Ty Gibbs into that ride, but that's not a sure thing either. Either way, it's going to be really hard to replace Kyle Busch over there. I can't help but feel like the biggest loser in this deal was Toyota.
Okay, Jay.
Okay, so often I say I disagree with Mike. I 110% agree with him there. This isn't just about Kyle Busch in the Cup Series in that Joe Gibbs Racing number 18. That's a hit, obviously, but Joe Gibbs Racing is going to be okay, whether it be with Ty Gibbs, whoever they put in there. This is about Toyota all the way through. Sharon and I, we were talking about it. Sammy Smith winning his second ARCA East Championship is in a KBM Toyota. That's down at the ARCA Menards East Series level. So you're right. I mean, this goes very deep. And I'm with Mike, and I don't understand how if Joe Gibbs Racing and Toyota couldn't find money for sponsorship or somehow come to an agreement, how it is that Richard Childress Racing can. So, you know, there had to be, like Mike said, kind of alluded to of the true effort, I mean, that was put behind it or the determination to make it happen. So I do think this is a huge hit. And I know it's a little bit different. We know Kyle Busch's talent, but I think back to when Ford Racing allowed Jeff Gordon to get away from him. Granted, he was an unknown at that point, but they were at least had him in the pipeline, if you will, and supposedly under contract, or they thought, to see something like that entirely change a manufacturer's presence. And I think this Kyle Busch deal is going to be felt across the board in many years, for many years, when it pertains to the KBM Motorsports deal that we've been talking about. The other thing I wanted to highlight here. Oh, go ahead, Sharon.
No. Go ahead. I thought you were done. I jumped in too
okay.
soon.
No, the one other thing that I know some of the reports have indicated, talking about Richard Childress signing, it was really Austin Dillon that kind of brought it forward, and I don't want to say negotiated, but was kind of the front lead on making it happen, being the first one to reach out to Kyle Busch. Richard Childress admitted, he said, you know, Austin came to him and said, hey, with Tyler Reddick gone, can we look at Kyle Busch? Can we make it happen? Do we want to? I was kind of happy to see Austin Dillon taking that leadership role within the organization as well.
Yeah, that was really interesting. I was kind of intrigued by that as well. And, you know, and like I said, the other thing that came out was after Tyler Reddick's announcement of going somewhere else in 2024, that Richard Childress didn't let any grass grow under his feet. He got on that right away at the behest of Austin Dillon suggesting Kyle Busch. So I do think, you know, that that is kind of a big deal there. But I agree with you guys 100%. I think this is a huge, huge loss for Toyota. I'm scratching my head over how in the world did they allow this to happen. I don't know if I should say it or not, but I'm going to go ahead and put it out there. It almost makes you feel like maybe there was some kind of falling out that happened at Joe Gibbs Racing or with Toyota, because I just cannot imagine from a business perspective why in the world would they let a driver of Kyle Busch's caliber go, knowing that he had their pipeline in KBM Motorsports, KBM Trucks, and ARCA. And like Jay said, this just goes so deep. And they've allowed all of that just to evaporate in front of them. And it's disappointing in a lot of ways. But I do see this as a big, big win for Chevrolet, for Richard Childress Racing, and probably for the KBM team as well, giving those drivers that opportunity to advance through the Chevrolet pipeline. So we'll see how it all plays out, and we'll see how this works out. I'm curious to know where that third charter is going to come from as well. And I think you're right, Mike. I think probably the thing that makes the most sense is for them to lease a charter in this coming year for that third entry at RCR. But again, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. The fact that they've got drivers of the caliber of Kyle Busch and Tyler Reddick could mean that they can run those three cars pretty well. But we'll have to wait and see how that plays out. Historically, that has not worked out well. So we'll see how it works out moving forward here. I can't wait for the other announcements. We've seen a bunch of other announcements in, you know, immediately following this Kyle Busch announcement. But there's more to come, without a doubt. Mike, your thoughts?
Yeah, more to come for sure. I think the big question mark here is the future of those three KBM Toyota affiliated drivers. I think that's probably the biggest question mark, and you can't help but feel bad for them. They did nothing wrong. It's just business, but they in the span of, it's not like this deal came together, or at least was finalized in a very short period of time, a month or so, maybe less. And in that span of time, these drivers went from a very promising trajectory to a very questionable one. I'm not saying their career is over. Their talent can speak for themselves, and if they have the ability and the money, they can continue racing, continue to develop, and find other pathways to success in the industry. But it feels like through no fault of their own, they really got they took a beating here, and you can't help but feel bad for them.
Yeah, I think they'll land on their feet. But, yeah, you kind of feel bad for them in the short term, for sure. Okay, Jay, what's our next hot topic to bring up here?
Well, for me, this might have been the bigger news of this week. I know, like I said, we had talked a lot about the Kyle Busch deal going into it, but we have a new playoff driver returning to the playoffs in the Xfinity Series, the number 51 of Jeremy Clements, as they had their penalty overturned and their win restored.
Okay. Michael, your thoughts on that?
Oh, boy. Oh, it hurts. It hurts so bad because this is two topics in a row where me and Jay are in violent agreement. If we didn't know anything about the Kyle Busch deal and this, the whole Richard Childress Racing, everything was dropped in our laps with no advance notice, maybe this wouldn't be as big of a deal. But I agree with Jay. This is the biggest news of the week so far. If y'all aren't familiar, Jeremy Clements won the Daytona race a few weeks ago in the Xfinity Series. And after post-race, I think they did a teardown inspection on that car. So he was credited with the win at the racetrack, but after further inspection of the car, he was issued an L2 penalty. And I didn't even think this was still possible. I thought NASCAR a couple of years ago had said, either win or you don't. But NASCAR said you're going to keep the win, and it's going to be the old encumbered win. So you can't count it towards playoff eligibility, which effectively eliminated the 51 from the playoffs. Well, they appealed the penalty, and the appeal was granted, which is unusual in and of itself, but it's huge implications for that little team. It's a small family-run operation. I'd be surprised if they had 10 full-time employees there. So it's absolutely huge for that team to be back in the Xfinity Series playoffs. Bad news for Ryan Sieg because he got pushed back out, but huge for Jeremy Clements and his small team to be back in the Xfinity Series playoffs. I'm really happy for him. I'm glad to see it. I hope they do well.
All right. I agree. This is huge news. We haven't seen this all season long. Every time an appeal has come up, or practically every time, I can't say every time, but it seems like NASCAR has, the appeal has not held up and the penalty stands. This is a small team, and so this is a big, big win for the little guys, for Jeremy Clements, not only to win the appeal, but to put himself back into the playoffs. So he is now playoff eligible. The loser in all of this is going to be Ryan Sieg, and he's going to have to really race hard in order to keep himself in the playoffs. This Xfinity Series race at Bristol is the regular season finale, and so he'll be racing this weekend to try to get that win to put himself into the playoffs as well. But that would put Landon Cassel on the outside looking in. So somebody's going to end up being a loser from this decision. And unfortunately, they've left it up to the drivers to duke it out at Bristol Motor Speedway. But this was really, really huge for Jeremy Clements. I'm happy for him. He is one of the small organizations within the Xfinity Series, and for him to make it into the playoffs is going to be very huge for that team from a sponsorship perspective, from a growth perspective for Jeremy Clements Racing and for Jeremy Clements himself. So anytime you're in the playoffs, it's a big, big deal for you and your sponsors and your race team. So this was a huge win in many, many ways for Jeremy Clements Racing. I don't have a whole lot more than that to add. So, Jay, I'm going to go to you and your thoughts.
Well, truthfully, and I know we never will to hear the actual arguments that were made, what blows my mind in this is going into the appeal, it appeared that the number 51's argument was that whatever was wrong or illegal with the car added no speed to it, no advantage. And I did hear on, I think it was the morning drive this morning, that what they had on it or the way it was, and I'm trying to recall even what the exact illegal portion to it was, but that it actually slowed the engine down. But it's still against the rules. And if your only argument is it didn't help win the race or make speed, that then it should be exempted, that hasn't held water forever and a day. So I don't know if they made a different argument when it came to the appeal board. Whatever it was, they got it overturned. And that, like you've mentioned, is just so huge. Puts them back in the playoff. Even the monetary penalty with that can affect that kind of team so hard. We've seen that with a couple smaller teams in the past, of just a monetary fine can put a real damper on their efforts. So this is extremely huge for that team. I'm happy to see them back in the playoffs. I feel bad for Ryan Sieg right now, as you mentioned, the first one to be the loser. If there's another winner that comes out of Bristol, it could also then affect Landon Castle, depending on how he runs. So we'll see how that all plays out. But I am happy for Jeremy Clements and that number 51 team. It was such a feel-good story, and then it got taken away. The other thing, Mike hit on something there that kind of makes me wonder. Being that NASCAR had ruled out and eliminated that encumbered win, if that's why it got overturned, because they said that no longer exists, so you can't issue that penalty. That kind of brought some curiosity to my mind.
Yeah, the part, Jay, was the intake manifold.
There we go. Yeah, something to do with the spacing in the intake manifold. Yep. Maybe Mike can shed some light on that.
Well, Mike? If you're handing over to me, I don't really know anything more about the specific infraction of what they did or allegedly did to the car and whether or not it would legitimately provide a performance advantage or not. Of course, any team that gets caught doing something, they're going to say pretty much that. It wasn't an advantage. It was just something that we did for safety or they're going to say anything but that we did something to get a performance advantage. We'll leave it at that. As far as the granting of the appeal, this is kind of where it's tough to be fans and see that an appeal gets granted or denied for that matter and get no further information as to the reasoning why. Obviously, they don't owe us anything, but fans like us get real curious, especially in a situation like this where the precedent is very strongly along the lines of appeals don't get granted. Almost, I don't know what the percentage is, but it feels like probably high 80%, if not more, of all appealed penalties get upheld because, well, these guys get caught cheating from time to time. And NASCAR usually gets it right when it comes time to issue penalties for infractions on car modifications or any other violation of the rule book. So it's very rare that we see an appeal actually upheld and a penalty get rescinded. So this is kind of unusual. I really wish we'd get some explanation on it, but here we are. With regard to Jay's point of, well, maybe it was an inconsistency in the rules, not so much a successful argument regarding performance, that has some merit as well. And again, that's why I really wish we could know what their specific reasoning was for overturning that penalty. You can't help but feel like it's a win for the little guy, and I know that's not really something that they're going to take into account when they decide whether they're going to grant an appeal or not, but it really can't help but feel for a team like Jeremy Clements Racing, who works so hard with so few people and so little resources. They finally break through and get a big win at a place like Daytona, and they're so excited about it, and a couple of days later they absolutely get kicked in the teeth with a penalty like this. You can't help but feel that, you know, they got a little bit of a break there. Like I said, I'm not saying that there was anything underhanded or inconsistent with how the rules are applied. It's just kind of how it feels.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I think the reason they don't get into the specifics on these kinds of things is, even though it didn't give them a competitive advantage, just by releasing some of that information, it gives some of these other guys an idea to try something that could give them a competitive advantage. So NASCAR kind of keeps some of that stuff under pretty tight wraps for that reason, and I think that they're just being trying to think of the word that I want to use here, but cautious maybe is one word that could be used here in not revealing some of that information so as to not give ideas to these other teams to try to work in that area to find a competitive advantage, especially if somebody wins an appeal over that by saying that they don't have a competitive advantage with whatever happened to that particular piece. Now, in the Brad Keselowski situation, they looked at it and they said, what you did was against our rules, but what you did makes sense, and we're going to put it out across the board for everybody to be able to do the same thing. So, you know, in that case, they thought that there was a change that was made that was advantageous for everyone, and they went ahead and made the change across the board. But, yeah, I just feel like that's why NASCAR is being a little tight-lipped about that, and they don't want to put out too much information there. So I'll leave it at that, and, Jay, you get your say here on the follow-up.
Well, for part of Mike's, I'm going to agree with him by disagreeing. I think the overturn rate of appeals is probably above 90%. We just don't see it all that often. I know this year Brad Keselowski's was, but that was from a safety aspect that NASCAR did decide to implement. And I'm with him. I would like to see a little bit more transparency when it comes to the decision as why. But I understand, and Sharon, you're right. NASCAR doesn't want to open the door for other teams by saying, hey, this team did this, it was overturned, and give them an idea or lead them down a certain path if NASCAR doesn't want them down that path. Although this may have been okay, they don't want them pushing that area. So I kind of understand that, but I'm also on the side of Mike of, you know, fans that really want to understand what's happening in the sport. So that information maybe should be a little more, I don't want to say public, but it's a tough position to be in. I understand that. And I certainly, like you said, Sharon, of you don't want to give these teams any kind of idea or inclination to try something that they shouldn't be or NASCAR doesn't want them to be. So try and steer clear of it. But I'm kind of in the middle. You know, like I said, I'm really curious as to what argument they made that got this overturned. But I also don't want to see every penalty get overturned, because most of the time the penalty is needed and they shouldn't have been doing it. So I still stand behind NASCAR. Like I said, most of the time I do feel they got it right. In this case, I have no idea, because I don't know exactly what it was that was wrong with the intake to begin with. And like I said, they may have made a completely different argument from what I saw and heard via social media. Their answer was it wasn't a competitive advantage, and I just don't see that winning and overturning an appeal. So I feel like there had to be something else that was said to change that over, but we don't know.
Okay, we'll let that be the last word. Mike, what do you have on your list for our next hot topic?
Well, this is kind of late-breaking another one when you all were on the show, but NASCAR has released the 2023 schedule for not just Cup Series, but all three major national touring series. Have you all had a chance to take a look at it yet?
Just briefly, I did not get much of a chance to look at it. I know I saw Road America on the list for Xfinity Series. I was happy to see that.
So, yeah, I guess I can just kind of go through some of the highlights here. This is probably the least significant change that we've seen year over year for the past couple. We have a major radical change for the 2021 season where they added a bunch of road courses. We had the LA Coliseum Clash added for this current season, 2022, but there's really nothing on there that we don't already know about. We have the Chicago Street Race. That's, of course, still on there. We have the North Wilkesboro All-Star Race. That's also on there. But other than that, the Cup Series schedule is more or less the same. Some races have changed a little bit. For example, the second Atlanta race in July is now going to be raced at night, which is great news. Hopefully it won't be as brutally hot there for the fans and the drivers. So that's a big change. But there's not a huge amount of significant changes in the Cup Series side. On the Truck Series side is probably some of the bigger changes. The trucks are going to be racing at the Milwaukee Mile next year. I don't think that any of the big three series has been to the Milwaukee Mile in quite some time. Trucks are also going to be racing at Sonoma. And a big one, the Truck Series will have a points-paying race at North Wilkesboro the day before the Cup Series All-Star race.
That's cool. Okay, Jay?
Yeah, I'm with you, Sharon. Whoop, make sure I'm off mute. Yep, okay. I hadn't got a chance to really look at it. There were a couple of things, and Mike mentioned one of them that we highlighted during the preview portion, the Truck Series returning to the Milwaukee Mile, and that is huge. Great. I love it. That's one of those, like, gateway I've been wanting to see for so long. The other ones Mike mentioned, we kind of already knew. The other addition was, I think, the trucks. Here, I'm trying to read through some notes while I'm doing this. The visit to the Milwaukee Mile will be the first time the trucks are returning to Brew City since 2009. So there's your date on that. It had been over 10 years. Then the Truck Series getting the festivities started on All-Star Weekend as they join the North Wilkesboro Speedway since the first time since 1996. That one's about almost 20 years. Truck Series playoffs will get underway at Lucas Oil Indianapolis Raceway Park and then crown their champion at Phoenix for the fourth consecutive year. So Mike's right, not a lot of huge changes. And the ones that really were, we kind of already knew, such as the Chicago Street Race. So the only other note here, it says NASCAR will head west. So it'll be the final race on the two-mile version of Auto Club Speedway. As that is going to be then in 2024, it looks like now projected for the reconfiguration to the short track. So I know that they said of, can't think of his name, Ben Kennedy said maybe one big change per year. This year it was the Chicago Street Race, talking about an overseas race, maybe the big one for next year as they look forward to that. For me, the Milwaukee Mile certainly is a huge one, in addition to North Wilkesboro with the All-Star Race.
Yeah, the other thing that kind of stood out for me is the Xfinity Series being a part of the Chicago Street Race as well on July 1st. I thought that was kind of cool. They added a pair of road courses to the Xfinity Series schedule at Sonoma on June 10th and then that street race on July 1st. Bristol Motor Speedway is going to host the playoff opener. This year it's the season finale. Next year it's going to be the playoff opener. And then, of course, the ending of the season at Phoenix is still on the table there. The Craftsman Truck Series playoffs gets underway August 11th at Lucas Oil Indianapolis Raceway Park. And like the Cup Series, Xfinity Series, they'll crown their champion at Phoenix again for the fourth consecutive year. So all of that kind of remains the same. All-Star Weekend, we talked about them being at North Wilkesboro. Other than that, I don't really see anything else. So I think we've mentioned just about everything. Darlington's still in play for the NASCAR playoffs to begin at Darlington over Labor Day and the championship at Phoenix. So, yeah, there are quite a few changes, and it is going to be interesting to see the schedule start out again with the Busch Light Clash at the Coliseum and with the All-Star Race being at North Wilkesboro. 75 years that NASCAR will celebrate next season, and I think they've got a good schedule to kind of help celebrate that 75 years of racing in NASCAR. So I'm looking forward to it. Mike?
The big question mark here is we know the trucks are going to race at North Wilkesboro on the 20th. The Cup race, the All-Star race is on the 21st. The North Wilkesboro advertised a three-day show of racing for what they're going to do that weekend. Obviously, the Xfinity Series is not going to be one of those days. So now the question is still out there of what is the third day at North Wilkesboro Speedway? And this is a little bit self-serving because I'm trying to go to North Wilkesboro. So the big question mark is, do I need to go there for 3 days or do I just want to go for the Truck Series race and the Cup Series race? I still need to figure that part out. So that's kind of a big question. My concern with North Wilkesboro is we talked about this on Monday. That surface is aged and very dated, and I'm hoping that there's enough laps left on that surface where a Truck Series race isn't going to cause enough damage to cause problems for the Cup Series All-Star race the next day. Definitely something to keep an eye on is the condition of North Wilkesboro Speedway. But there's a lot going on there, and I'm really looking forward to seeing it. I agree with Jay that Milwaukee is a great addition to the Truck Series. That track is another one that was right on the verge of extinction, and it's really nice to see Milwaukee Mile start coming back into the discussion here. The one notable thing that wasn't on there is kind of disappointing is no Iowa Speedway date for any of the three major touring series, and that's disappointing because Iowa is a great facility, and it's kind of rough to see a great facility like that languish and not really get the utilization that they really deserve. Maybe for 2024 we can see one of the major three national touring series go back to Iowa, but of all the other things on the schedule, I think the lack of Iowa, if there was a disappointing thing, the lack of Iowa was it.
Okay, Jay.
Well, I know we should have time for one more hot topic where I can disagree with Mike, so I'll save it for that. I have to agree that Iowa not being on there for any of this series is heartbreaking. Sharon, I was able to go to that Speedway with you and do some coverage there. I don't know what the ARCA schedule has for them, but you're right, absolutely. And it was one that was so close to being talked about of getting a Cup race and to now not have any. I'm not sure what happened there. Hopefully we can see that one recover as we have some, whether it be long-term of North Wilkesboro, the Milwaukee Mile, that it doesn't go away and get forgotten. The one thing I want to say here, the balance of the changes, for so many years, and I want to say it was Chocolate Myers maybe that talked about it, that NASCAR, it was the same every year. Nothing changed. Okay, we've gone on from that. We got to make some changes and refreshing it at least every so often. And I think this year is an example of that. Not any major changes. I take that back. A few major changes. Chicago Street Race, obviously a major. Adding North Wilkesboro, major. Okay? But throughout the whole of it, not a whole lot of changes. You know, little tweaks. And I know at least for tracks, say, such as the All-Star Race or some others, we've seen three-year deals, five-year deals. I'm okay with that, but then reevaluate after those years. I'm with Mike, the night race at Atlanta is a good move, but I consider that kind of a little tweak of changing it to a night race. Excuse me. So I think NASCAR is in a sweet spot of they are making changes, not major, big, drastic, or totally revamping the schedule like we saw a few years back, but it was needed then because it had been so stalemated for so long, it had to be a complete overhaul.
Yeah, and they've done a good job of doing that, making some changes. One other thing that I did notice here is that several tracks still kept their two dates. Tracks like Phoenix, Las Vegas, Richmond, Bristol, Kansas, Charlotte, they all have two races still on the schedule. But the one race track that did not maintain two races on the schedule. You still have Circuit of the Americas in Texas, but Texas Motor Speedway has only one race, and that's during the round of 12 playoffs in September. They used to have a May race. That May race is now taken by the Worldwide Technology Center, and in fact, the Circuit of the Americas race is in March. So that's kind of a big change, I think, as well. And I think we've been talking about that Texas needed to lose one of their dates. They have, in fact, lost one of those dates, and Circuit of the Americas is still on the track, which I'm super, super happy about. So we'll see how that continues to play out if in future years we see any other tracks lose one of their dates. Mike?
The loss of the second Texas Motor Speedway race, I don't think anyone's going to shed a tear. Maybe when they reconfigure. I mean, they're talking about reconfiguring Texas Motor Speedway. I'm hoping they don't try and make it into another super speedway-style track like they did with Atlanta. Nothing against Atlanta, but I think we are at or maybe even beyond critical mass for super speedway-style racing. So trying to turn Texas into another super speedway, I don't think is a road that they should go down. But there's a lot of other options out there for reconfiguring Texas Motor Speedway and making it into a better facility that has entertaining racing. Really, that's why they lost the date, is ever since the reconfiguration a few years ago, the racing there has not been good. It has been universally panned by fans who watched it. Even the media, who's usually more apologetic about stuff like that, even they can't ignore just how bad the racing at Texas has become. So until Texas can put on a better show with better racing on a more consistent basis, they just honestly don't deserve a second race, especially when there's so many more tracks out there like COTA, or North Wilkesboro, or any of the other facilities that are out there that can put on better racing and a more entertaining show for the fans. So maybe Texas can fix their track configuration problems and recover, but until they do, I think one race a year is more than enough for that facility, and I'm happy to see it.
Okay. Let's see. I think we do have time for one more topic, Jay. What do you want to talk about?
I want to argue with Mike, so I'm going to talk about Brandon Jones going to Junior Motorsports in the number nine.
Okay, let's talk about that, Mike.
You know, we've been having such a nice day so far. Me and Jay have been uncharacteristically agreeable with each other. Well, that's coming to an end. Unfortunately, what's not coming to an end is Brandon Jones's racing career. He's been in the Xfinity Series number 19 with Joe Gibbs Racing, arguably one of the best cars in the entire series. This is his seventh full-time season. He's got five wins to show. He's run in outstanding equipment, and he's been mediocre at best. And now he's going to go to the other most outstanding team in the Xfinity Series. And I don't know what the future is for him, but I guess it's just as long as the check's clear, he's going to have a ride. I'm disappointed to see Junior Motorsports basically go to a pay driver model, but at the same time, it keeps the nine car on the track. I know we were speculating that without a development driver in the Chevy pipeline, like there isn't right now, they would need to take in somebody who brings money to the table, in this case, Brandon Jones, in order to keep that nine car on the track. So I'm happy from that standpoint that the nine car will continue to be competitive because they are one of the best cars on the racetrack week in and week out. Disappointed to see Brandon Jones in it just because I have no faith in Brandon Jones. That's just to be frank and blunt about it. Brandon Jones's performance over the past seven seasons has not done anything to inspire confidence in his performance going into his eighth full-time season.
Okay, Jay. Or I guess it's my turn. I was just pulling up Brandon Jones over here at Racing Reference. He does have five wins since 2015 in the Xfinity Series. He has 35 top 10 finishes. He has 97 top 10 finishes and six poles throughout that time. So I do think he's had some success. There's always a learning curve, in the comparing that to his 8 years in the Camping World Truck Series, let's see, he had 228 starts in the Xfinity Series over 8 years, 49 starts in the Cup in the Truck Series. He has one win, 14 top fives, and 24 top tens there. His stats are not horrible. And I know that he's had a lot of success in the ARCA Menard Series as well. In fact, this year he's had, what, two or three wins in the ARCA Menard Series as well. Let me see if those stats, yeah, those stats are here too. He's had three wins in the Xfinity Series over 7 years, 29 starts, 8 wins, 21 top fives, and 23 top tens with 5 poles in 29 starts. And I think that, I think that he has had some success. Now, I know a lot of people complain about the drivers that come in with daddy's money in these series. But sometimes that is not always an advantage for a lot of these drivers. I know a lot of people think that it is. It gives them the money. But sometimes they have to work a little bit harder in these series because of the perception that a lot of people have kind of put on their backs. I think Brandon Jones is a very talented driver, and I think in junior motorsports equipment, I think he's going to surprise a lot of people next year. And that's all I'm going to say there. I think his stats speak for themselves. Jay?
Well, I'm going to say a little bit more than that. And you hit on talking about the ARCA Menard Series this year. We read that this is his fifth start of the year. He's got three wins, and I think his worst finish was third. So we know he has the talent. Is he the best driver out there? Absolutely not. I wouldn't even begin to try and argue that. But I do not think he is a no-talent driver who is only there because of money. There have been a couple throughout the years that I do feel were that way at the Cup level as well as the Xfinity level, and they're not here anymore. So we'll see how that goes. As far as Mike's argument of sponsorship money being why somebody's there, Justin Allgaier is with Junior Motorsports because of Brandt. If Brandt were to go away, I don't know that Justin Allgaier would be there. You can't take that as the sole reason as to whether or not a driver is good. Look at their stats. I believe out of those 8 years in the Xfinity Series, he has been a championship contender in six of those. Okay, now is he winning the championship? No. Like I said, I'm not arguing he's the best driver out there, but he is a solid driver. And we've seen other drivers. I mentioned Jimmy Johnson couldn't win a race in the Xfinity Series. Is he a hack, no talent driver? No, he went on to win 7 Cup championships. You never know. The Xfinity Series and Cup Series are two different series. So that's one of those of the change of scenery. Joey Logano, another one. Couldn't win a race, but Braden Shorten with Joe Gibbs Racing at the Cup level. Went on to win a championship for Penske. The change of scenery. So I think this move to Junior Motorsports is a good thing for him. Now, we've mentioned it with a couple other drivers. Is this maybe their last chance? You know, that, again, going to a second powerhouse team when it comes to the Xfinity Series, yeah, if you don't deliver, maybe it is time to move on. We'll have to see. But I do think that he is talented enough to have earned that spot, not just based on money, as I did the driver he's replacing, Noah Gregson. That's another one Mike seems to think is a no talent. I think he's got 5 wins on the year, going to come out leading the championship standings here in after this race.
Mike, your follow-up?
I'll give Noah Gregson credit where credit is due. He has at least finally started to develop to the point where he's able to get what the car has for him. So I'll give him credit where credit is due. Brandon Jones, on the other hand, has not. I'm not super familiar with exactly how the 19 car is set up, but I'm willing to bet it's not substantially different than the 18 or the 54 car, yet he continuously runs behind them year in and year out, no matter who is in that car. Same thing for the 20 car back when the 20 was still racing full-time in the Xfinity Series. I'm pretty sure that if I had 7 full-time seasons with 250-something career starts, I could probably crank off 5 wins in the very best equipment that could potentially be put on the racetrack. So, yes, he has won races. Yes, he has made it into the playoffs, but let's not look past the fact that he is one of the most experienced drivers in the Xfinity Series, and he is only just barely cracking into that win column every single year, while drivers come and drivers go in that series, dominate the series, and then move on, and guys like Brandon Jones just stay there because that's about the peak of their potential. So you talk about drivers who are unsuccessful, and there's always a lot of, for lack of a better word to use it, excuses of, oh, well, they haven't had a team built up around them, or they haven't had a chance to grow and gain experience. So Brandon Jones has had all of that. He's had the team built up around him. He's had plenty of time to develop and gain experience, and he's just kind of doing what he does every single year, and it's working for him. It's working for him, and he just got another ride. But I don't see any potential upshot to Brandon Jones, and I think that this – I'm surprised he got another ride, to be honest with you. But I think this is by far the top of the line for him of where he could potentially go. He's not going to end up in the Cup Series. He's going to stay in the Xfinity Series probably until the money dries up, and that's just how it's going to be for him.
Well, I give Dale Jr. and Kelly Earnhardt a lot more credit than that. I don't think that they would take a no-talent driver into their organization on a hope and a prayer that he's going to do better. I agree with Jay. He's probably not the top talent. Nobody's arguing that. But I think that Brandon Jones does have talent. And I think that Kelly Earnhardt and Dale Jr. have recognized that, and they've taken him into the Junior Motorsports organization. So I'm not going to insult them by telling them that they've taken a no-talent driver into their organization. I do think that sometimes team dynamics makes a huge difference. And we've seen teams, especially under the Joe Gibbs Racing umbrella, that have not always flourished, but when they've gone to other organizations, they've done extremely well, and some better than others. And I think that's what we're going to see with Brandon Jones. I think once he gets out of that umbrella, and I'm not saying it's not anything disparaging to Joe Gibbs Racing. It's just looking at what's happened historically at that organization, that when teams leave there, they sometimes do a whole lot better. So I think that that's going to happen with Brandon Jones. If he can get into a different environment where he's not not always at the top of the list. And I think, again, a lot of that has to do with people having this perception about if your dad makes money and you come into racing, that somehow you have an advantage. That perception follows you and sometimes works against you. And I think that in some cases that's overlooked. So I'm happy for Brandon Jones. I'm happy to see him get another opportunity with a different organization. And I see Junior Motorsports as an organization that is very, very supportive of their drivers. I haven't always seen that at Joe Gibbs Racing for all of their drivers. We've seen a lot of teams leave because they didn't get the support that they needed at Joe Gibbs Racing. So I'm excited for Brandon Jones, and I do think that we might see some really good things from him at Junior Motorsports. Jay?
Well, and you alluded to it, and I'm going to use it. You mentioned earlier in the Cup Series, Richard Childress Racing, that when they try to go to a three- or four-car team, that the resources are just spread too thin. When it comes to the Xfinity Series and Joe Gibbs Racing, they've always had one developmental driver that the main focus is on. And then Kyle Busch was coming in and racing and winning races. Okay, so that's with the one team, the other team being full-time. And we've seen that. I mean, this year it happens to be Ty Gibbs. You know, Mike said it. We don't know the intricacies of what's in that car or whatever, but we've seen it in other organizations that to maintain multiple cars is really tough at a top level. So maybe he isn't getting the exact same equipment, the best equipment. We don't know that. But I think at Junior Motorsport, Sharon hit on this too, and I think to right now Trackhouse Racing, how the team unity is much different. The atmosphere of that team versus a bigger conglomeration like Joe Gibbs Racing maybe isn't as close-knit between drivers, between teams, and everything else. So I really think this is a great opportunity for him. I'm excited to see it. And following next year's Xfinity Series banquet, I hope to have barbecue curl for Mike.
Okay. All in good humor here and in good faith. Okay, we're coming up to the top of the hour here, so now we're going to do our roundtable, and Mike, we'll start with you.
Sure, it's going to be Mike _O on Twitter, Mike double _ O on Reddit. Really looking forward to the racing at Bristol this weekend. It's one of my favorite tracks year in, year out. They always put on a great show, and even better, my work schedule lines up perfectly with it. I should be done at about, I'll call it 3 o'clock or so in the afternoon every single day, so I'll be able to catch all the racing action this weekend, and I couldn't be happier.
All right. And Jay?
Well, we'll end on back to agreeing with Mike. The Bristol weekend here, especially with these races, the storylines that are going to happen throughout these three races and different scenarios we've talked about, just a huge weekend of racing at Bristol Motor Speedway. So I'm most certainly excited about it. That's one I don't think we'll ever see lose either of its two dates. So you can follow me on Michael Hoosman on Facebook, MoparMJ8 on Twitter and Instagram. And you may see some friendly jibes between Mike and I on Twitter as well. So,
okay. I am Pam for Racing Site on Twitter, Pam for Racing Blog and Radio everywhere else, including fanforracing.com. And we will have our player up on fanforracing.com shortly so that people can listen to the podcast before all of the racing that's going to take place this weekend starting on Thursday night. By the way, Sunday is a free day. No NASCAR racing or ARCA racing on Sunday. All of the races will be taking place from Thursday through Saturday, all night races, and a lot to look forward to, as these guys have said. It's one of the favorite The August race at, well, I guess we're September now, but this fall race at Bristol is one of the most popular races on the schedule, and there are so many storylines going into this weekend that we'll be watching as these races unfold, with it being the season finale for the Xfinity Series and the elimination race for the Cup Series and the Truck Series back on track for their first race of their next round that will eliminate four drivers when that round is said and done. So I'm looking forward to it. I hope everybody enjoys the podcast as much as we enjoy doing it. And a big shout out to both Jay Huseman and Michael Orzel. You guys have been the stalwarts this week on Pam for Racing Radio, as we've got a few of our members that are out on vacation and honeymoons and work schedules. You guys kind of kept everything going this week, so I appreciate that. And we'll look forward to talking to everybody on the other side here. With that, guys, I think we're ready to call it a wrap, unless you have something more.
That's it. Have a great day, everyone.
Just appreciate the time, Sharon. Thank you.
Okay, good night, everybody, and we'll talk to you on the other side. Bye-bye.